My name is Randy Joseph. I've been asked to moderate today's session. I'm quite proud to be here and introduce Tom and Dave in a moment. This is SACPA, and remind everybody that it's a volunteer organization, and if you throw your $10 in the basket on the table and if somebody will ensure that there's the right amount for everybody there, we much appreciate it. SACPA is a volunteer nonprofit organization, relies on the contributions of members and session attendees to continue their work. I'd like to acknowledge University of Lethbridge. They assist SACPA in distribution of flyers and also Lethbridge College Communication Arts students for recording audio to be posted on the SACPA website. And thank you very much, Derek, since providing our lunch. So meeting today, we'll introduce the presenters, and they'll talk for 25 to 30 minutes. We will then take a break, and we'll have our lunch. And we'll then invite the presenters to come back about 1 o'clock to answer questions that you may have developed during your luncheon, and hopefully during your lunch you'll be able to discuss what they present in the first session, so you'll have some good questions for them at 1 o'clock. Today's topic is gangs and organized crime in Lethbridge. The activities of gangs and organized crime was always thought of a big city problem, but increasingly gangs are getting involved in smaller communities and middle-sized cities much as Lethbridge, and Lethbridge is certainly no exception for gang activity. Economically motivated, these gangs are functioning mainly through the sale of illicit drugs and are involved in stolen property, the sex trade, theft, fraud, money counterfeiting, and laundering. With the evolution of computers and the Internet, cyber-related crime is on the rise, and although not limited to gangs, we can certainly expect this kind of illegal activity to be a huge challenge for law enforcement in years to come. So, our topic today is, what is the Lethbridge Regional Police Service doing to combat gangs and organized crime? Are there protocols and procedures? Are they working? What can we as citizens do to help assist or prevent this type of crime? So presenting today is Chief Tom McKenzie. Chief completed the criminal justice program at the Lethbridge Community College in 1976. He's worked his way through a number of ranks inside the Lethbridge Police Service, and he's also been involved in several provincial action committees. He was sworn in as chief of police on January 1st, 2007, and is currently conducting that as what I consider probably one of the toughest jobs in town. Throughout his career, Chief McKenzie has been involved with sports, neighborhood association. He's been a criminal justice lecturer at the college, and he's also been a course designer of white-collar crime courses at Athabasca University. I've known Tom since 1967. When we both grew up in Edmonton, we were in the same high school, we played in the same hockey team, and he was our all-star goalie. As long as you shot farther than center, he would make the save. Got in a little bit tighter, it was a chancier situation. Also with us is Sergeant David Mays, who's also from Edmonton, who didn't live too far from me in Edmonton. So I guess all three of us are Edmontonians that are down here with our careers down south. He graduated from the criminal justice program at Grant McEwen, and he joined Lethbridge Regional Police Service in 1986, and he's been promoted as a sergeant since 2002, and he's in charge of Lethbridge Regional Police Service Integrated Intelligence Unit, which he helped develop jointly with the RCMP and works very closely with the RCMP and CSIS and a number of other intelligence organizations in our country. This unit's an essential tool in the combat of gangs and organized crime, and Dave, in his spare time, is very active in the local soccer community. He also instructs at the Lethbridge College, and he's pursuing a university degree in anthropology. So what that has to do with organized crime, I'm not sure, but good for Dave. So I'd like to introduce Tom McKenzie, and then right after that, I think Dave will come up after that. Tom.
Thank you very much, everyone. And Randy, thank you very much for the introductions. And all I ever remember is saying, if the damn defenseman would only keep these guys outside of the blue line, we wouldn't have a problem. Why blame the goalie? Really happy to have the opportunity to be here to speak to you, and I'll also use it as an opportunity to plug upcoming public forums that we'll be hosting. Right now, Can Host is putting together some forums for us. We'll be doing some media on that, and I would encourage each and every one of you to spread the word to not only your friends and family, but your neighbors and anyone you're speaking to in the community. It's a great opportunity for us to hear from you what it is you feel about your community, if you feel safe in your community, what we have to do to bring that feeling of safety, and what we should be targeting as a police service. And that's in recognition of some of the things we're going to be talking today for the future for us. on building our strategic plan and business plan to meet the city's three-year budget that will start in 2009 again for us. And so by May of this year, the city would like our forecasts on what our budget increases are going to look like, what we're going to need to combat crime out for the next 3 years, and how we're going to do that. And so over the next couple of months, our fellows are going to be very busy building a strategic plan and a business plan. And part of the kickoff to that for us is public forums near the end of the month and the first part of February, where we're going to get feedback in the seven different beat areas of Lethbridge and Coaldale. So Coaldale comprises beat 70 for us, and then we have our beats numbers 1 through 6 here within the city, and we'll be going out to the senior center, to the university, to the college to meet with the students, and then into each one of the community areas or beat areas within our city. And we'd love to see all of you come out. You'll hear a bit of what I'm going to say today. Some of you that have heard me speak at Provis and some other community groups are going to hear a little bit of redundancy from me at the front end. Mine is just a little bit about us and our service and some of our philosophies and values that guide us. David will give you the really good, hard-punching stuff on organized crime and its impact on our communities, and it is here. Organized crime is one of the biggest, most profitable businesses in the world anywhere, and it does impact us whether or not you're actively using drugs, whether or not you're actively defrauding people, or whether or not you're actively in the business of trying to stay alive and function by supporting yourself with your business. You are impacted because costs are driven very high by counterfeit products, by fraud, and by rip-offs that we all pay for as innocent victims of crime. So we move forward on our strategic business plan based on four pillars of policing. And David had told me what to do here, and I just both forgot. So those are public safety, public confidence, public trust, and professionalism. Public safety, number one, that's what we're about. That's what you have a police service for. You want to be safe in your community. We have to hear from you what it is that makes you feel safe in your community. Public trust and public confidence come from that feeling of safety and the relationships we can build. Through strong communication, and we're going to make more and more efforts of trying to communicate with our public, we build relationships. And the trust is the glue that keeps those relationships together. But if we don't have your trust and your support, we as a police service will fail. Much the same as myself as a chief. If the individual officers that work for me don't have trust and confidence in my ability to vision and move us forward as a police service, it's going to be very difficult for them to complete their jobs. And that's my role. And that's what you pay your taxes for us to do a good job. The professionalism speaks more to our professionalism as service. We have to recognize what our community needs and provide that. And at the same time, we have to have our officers acting as professionals within the community, performing their jobs ethically, with excellence and commitment to their community. And you'll see those in the values of our service. Based on those pillars, we've developed a mission, and that mission is one of providing safe communities. It's been changed a little bit. It hasn't changed an awful lot. There was some work done in Terry Waters' days around this area. John LaFlamme came in and bought us accreditation. And through accreditation, we surely had to clearly articulate what our mission and vision was. So we have that mission of providing safe communities. And how we're going to do that, what's our vision? Is that safe community through our partnerships, our participation, and then our excellence in service delivery. You have every right to expect excellence in policing the same way as you expect it at a restaurant you go to, the same way you expect it at any business that you expect anything from. We are a business, and we do operate under business principles, and we are in the business of making a profit. Our profit is one of social profit, and that's what our job is to do, is bring about a strong social economy for our community, make sure that you're safe to move about, provide assistance to your community, and make it a place where we all want to live. In my opinion, it already is. I think Lethbridge is the best city in Alberta, if not in the country, and I'm going to have a hard time ever leaving it. And certainly born and raised in Edmonton, and no slight to it, but it's a good place to be from, far away from, in my opinion. I certainly go back and see my family, and all of Alberta's great, but Lethbridge has got it all, and we're a tremendous community. So we build on our values of our service. And those are respect, honesty, integrity, excellence, and commitment. And I don't think I have to define those for you, and we certainly leave it up to our officers, and they're there. If they do not respect every individual, from the person that lives on the street to the very affluent and those people that are running our community, then we've lost it. We haven't done our job. We have to move through our job and our day with empathy, and we have to understand issues and concerns. And I would suggest that's what makes a community strong, is when you're willing to bend over and pick up that individual off the street, give him a helping hand up, and make sure that there are programs that can support him. and help him move along in his journey or her journey. And then we build that social capital. If we could get everybody out working and in nice homes, we'd have a great community that we'd all be proud of. There wouldn't be need for crime if we didn't have to support addictions and other things that come along, and we didn't have the basic incentive of greed. So that's those are very quick generalized statements, perhaps, but they certainly do lead to a lot of it. If we're performing our job with integrity, the excellence will be there. The integrity dictates that our members will pick up every file and recognize that a theft of a young fellow's bike is not a big deal to us because we see lots of them. But to that young fellow, that's very important. A break and enter into your home, I've suffered two in my home. I probably did not react in an appropriate way, but I can sure tell you I saw the impacts on my daughters and my wife, and they're long-lasting. We that go to them all the time sometimes forget about that. Have that empathy, have that integrity that dictates you're going to do your job well. And get back to people, help them understand what's happened and what the roadblocks for us are. We're not going to catch every crook, we're not going to charge every crook, and sometimes there's impediments to it. We always say that knowing is one thing, proving is another, and it's very difficult, and it's a very important function within our society to protect the rights of individuals and make sure we do it. And through all of it, that comes a strong commitment, and that's an expectation of each and every one of our officers. They've all heard this little speech that I'm giving here today to them several times, and I'm firmly committed to it. We are accountable to our community, and if there is any concerns, please get a hold of us and let us know. We'd like your compliments, but we also want to know your comments about what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. So please, again, it's up to you, and your feedback will make us better. So based on those things, we have developed a strategic plan, and that'll lead into what David is doing and some of those things. Those are the four main areas of our focus as a service: traffic safety. Every survey, it's a pretty well split. You write too many tickets, you don't write enough tickets. Photo radar is a cash cow. Photo radar is great. Red light cameras are going to be nothing but a nuisance. Red light cameras are wonderful. I can tell you one of the biggest things of public safety is if you can't get where you want to go in this community safely, it's not going to do you a lot of good. There's more life lost to traffic accidents and injury than there is to any other crime in this country. And it impacts us, every one of us, daily. We had to come through traffic to get here today. We cannot afford to have bad drivers in our community, and we have to be safe. Crime and disorder, that very clearly focuses on what David is here for and what David's job is and the job of many of those folks in our special crimes organization area. So organized crime, property crime, downtown policing, and new types of crime. As fast as you can invent a program on the internet, you can invent a new type of crime. Technology allows these guys to victimize people around the world daily and much more quickly than they ever could when I started in policing. And new trends and new types of crime pop up just as often as new inventions pop up, and there'll always be an individual that's willing to fill that groove and that niche to make a profit. Healthy organizations, again, we can't build a professional organization if we do not provide the training, the succession planning, and what it is that our officers need in the way of tools and training. Technology, there is no limit and no budget for the bad crime organizations. They can spend as much as they need to develop the technology they need to go ahead. We have to be able to keep up with it. They have programmers that can build programs and fish things that we don't even understand how it works. We have to have the officers or the individuals or the conduits into that systems that will help us understand that. We have to have people that are trained so they understand what it is about integrity and empathy and how it impacts their job. Those values that we hire, I think, are the values that every one of us would like to see in our neighbors. Respect being the biggest one to me. Without respect, our society fails, and it's what allows you to drive like a crazy man. It allows you to turn up your stereo at night and ignore your neighbor's need for sleep. It allows you to steal things. It allows you to do things. A lack of respect for yourself allows you to wade off into addictions and not caring for yourself and be involved in things. If we can bring it back and foster that and show our officers how they can make a difference, we can do it. Community involvement. Again, the police are only as strong as the people, and that's a principle of Sir Robert Peel and many that have been criminologists and looked at policing for many, many years and centuries. We're a key component of a community, and we're there to provide a service. We started out basically taking care of ourselves and our communities and volunteering to walk the communities and keep people safe at night. And then we decided we needed to hire somebody, and as is the way with human nature, if you can get somebody to do it for you, go ahead, and it's cheaper. We're the guys that are doing it for you, but we have to have your involvement. We have to understand from you, something looks funny in that house next door. It's all covered in tinfoil. The lights go 18 hours a day. It's a grow operation. We have to understand where this guy is next door that's never around and why it is he has 15 houses, and the value of those houses don't seem to be right, mortgage fraud. We have to understand why this guy has five different cars and he hauls them in his garage and they come out in pieces. We have to understand why there's people in the mall stealing. We have to understand why there's people hanging around and fighting and causing problems. And you're our eyes and ears. We can't be everywhere at once. We'd love to be. We'd love to have a New York Police Department that can put a cop in every corner, but it's going to cost you an awful lot of money. And it's really effective in proper situations. But we have to develop programs so that we can be more visible, but we need your help. So that leads into our business plan. And the business plan has five key areas: providing an emergency intervention. Again, public safety, that's what we're about. We're going to figure out the best ways to be there when you need us. Get there as quick as we can. Response times do drive us. We're like the fire service. It's important for us to be there when you need us. Unfortunately, sometimes we do stack calls, and there is priorities, just the same as there is when you're dealing with your daily lives. You establish priorities. We establish priorities as to which type of calls we can go to. And I know when that neighbor's dog is barking at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's a big priority to you, and we do sympathize with that, and we do understand that. But that domestic violence fight that's taking place across the city, or that bar brawl that's involving kids with knives and guns, is probably just a little bit more important, and I don't think anybody would argue that. And it's not to diminish your complaint. It's there. But it's understanding the challenges we face. Promote public safety and awareness. We have to get out and do talks like this. We have to be involved in our community. Blaine Sadoka, one of our constables that's followed along the lines of many, many fellows. Marcel St. Ange is here, one of our past community liaison officers. If we're not out in the community creating programs and sharing, like Crime Stoppers that Marcel was so involved with, Officer Minor Brown from Vince Ertis days, the different things that Randy Ward did, that Darcy Murray, that Brian Ward, I should say, Darcy Murray and George Kriskadden and all these people, that we get out in the community and tell you what our challenges are so you can support us. And develop community capacity again. Be there. Participate in communities. We have the strong social values. We have the integrity. We have the excellence that makes us good, strong partners in any type of event that we want to drive forward. And then develop our organizational capacity again. Provide what it is that our fellows need to do their job so that they can get it done, and then develop partnerships, whether they be assisted learning, environment response teams, the school resource officers, or whether it be the ALERT in the sense Alberta's law enforcement response to organized crime, where we partner with, and David is a big component of helping develop that, where we develop pro teams and street teams that go out and gather intelligence. Or whether it be simple things as domestic, well, I shouldn't say that, it's not a simple thing, but the bigger things like Domestic Violence Action Team, where we partner, the Sexual Violence Action Committee, CSAR, Community Substance Abuse Reduction Team. We have to be there and we have to provide the information, much the same as we're here today to participate with you that can make social change and provide you an understanding of our challenges. And so with that said, I'll try and get out of the way for David so that he can get up here and give you the meat and the potatoes of today's presentation. Thank you very much for your patience and understanding. I look forward to answering your questions and addressing any concerns or comments you might have a little bit later on after lunch.
I'm kind of stuck up here. In my classroom, I'm used to walking around the entire classroom and walking around my students to see if they're actually taking notes. What I'm here to talk to you about today is basically to give you an awareness of organized crime, what it is, and the reality that we do have organized crime functioning in Lethbridge. There's basically nowhere in the world today that organized crime does not exist. It touches every part of our lives, everything from your bank accounts to your family members to friends to people you know or stories that you've heard. And it can be anything from the unfortunate teenager that's hooked on crack cocaine to somebody that had money stolen from them from an internet scam or a pyramid scheme or a Nigerian fraud letter. In one way, shape, or form, our community has all been touched by those type of things. Organized crime usually strikes when we are least prepared. We wake up every morning, we go to work, we drive to work, we don't think about it. We got a really good deal on a set of brakes that we have in our vehicle. I bought them for half price from a guy out of the back of a van parked down by Gulf Gardens. The reality is that what you bought was counterfeit brakes. They're not actually up to par, they don't pass the Canadian safety standards, and one day when you're driving down the West Side Hill, your brakes fail. Now you're in an accident, you're injured, possibly killed. That's the reality of counterfeit products that exist in our world today. So while it may seem like a very good deal, in reality, it's not a good deal at all. And those type of things will catch up to us as victims at the end of the day. Organized crime are defined as activities such as marijuana grows, drug dealing, car theft, all of which are multi-billion dollar industries in Canada. Stock price manipulation. I'll talk about the organized crime groups and what they do with the illegal money that they've gained that they don't pay tax on and how they get it back into our system and profit from that. Identity theft is a huge one. Cross-border smuggling. We're very close in proximity to the U.S. border. I have a very good relationship with people down at the border, and we have things going on all the time. Money laundering, counterfeiting, and sexual exploitation of children are all involved in organized crime. And realistically, these items that I've mentioned to you here only begin to touch the surface. One of the things that you need to realize is that for these people, it's a livelihood and a business. And just like yourselves, they become professional at it. They're often very skilled at hiding their operations, investing their stolen funds in legitimate businesses. You may not necessarily think that there's anything wrong with the house next door until you see our police truck there and several vehicles, and all of a sudden we're hauling out garbage bag after garbage bag of plants that have been growing in the basement there. Crime costs Canadians a lot emotionally and financially. Organized crime is into the billions of dollars. One figure that I've heard at different conferences I've been to is that the marijuana industry in British Columbia is worth about $17 billion a year. It's actually supposed to be higher than what BC generates itself. As much as possible, we need to protect ourselves from organized crime. One of the main things that we need to do is be aware that it exists and what it is, and that's part of you being here today. Through Criminal Intelligence Services Canada, what we know is there's approximately 800 criminal groups operating across Canada in large and small communities. This isn't just about the big centers. Many are local. They're stealing cars, selling drugs in your neighborhoods, and they're the face of crime that you see. When you see a newspaper story about somebody that we've charged or a roundup we've done of a bunch of local-level drug dealers, they are supporting organized crime groups. The drugs that they're selling in our community had to come from a bigger person and from a bigger location. And those are the people that are making the big money. They've got the little kids. They've got the 16-year-old kids in the high school selling the drugs for them. The people that we have link up with bigger and more sophisticated groups. So now you're talking about, in the instance of cocaine, where you're talking about the South American drug cartels, will be those type of bigger groups. The people that organize the exportation of drugs. The people that are responsible for distribution, and then, of course, as I've mentioned, the people that we have selling the drugs out on our streets here in Lethbridge. Organized crime starts with some of the lower crimes that we see, prostitution, loan sharking, gambling, and narcotics. What they want to do, and the people that are actually running some of these organized crime groups, their idea at the end of the day is become legitimized and remove themselves as much as possible from possibly being caught by the police or being detected as making money from the profits that are gained from these illegal activities. They want to conceal their involvement in organized crime by establishing front companies. So we've had individuals where they've lived in a condominium, and they have 17 businesses registered, numbered Alberta companies registered to them. The companies don't produce anything, they don't make anything, but there's millions and millions of dollars going through the numbered companies. They invest in nightclubs, real estate developers. Real estate is huge in Alberta, as you know. Hotels, restaurants, billiard halls, casinos, and finance companies. Anywhere where they can possibly hide money or that would be to your imagination of where they could hide their money, that's what they'll do. As I've discussed, they cost Canadians billions of dollars every year. Where you are hardworking taxpayers and you pay your taxes to the government, these people don't pay a dime. And that's their whole goal, is to never have to pay any money. Because they don't pay any tax dollars to the Canadian society, either provincially or federally, they're benefiting from your hard work and your tax dollars. And they're living off of your tax dollars. Financial price tag mounts up when you add in the fraud, the identity theft, the illegal drugs, and counterfeiting. The counterfeiting of products and the price that we pay for products, because of all the counterfeit products out there, the industry has to make their money back somehow. So we, at the end of the day, as the consumers, end up paying that. Higher insurance premiums, all of those type of things. If the bank loses $1 billion a year on identity theft and fraud, at the end of the day, the bank's not going to pay for that. We are, with increased service fees and those type of things. You also, as Chief McKenzie pointed out, as taxpayers, you also pay for law enforcement and the increased cost of law enforcement and the needs that we have to be specially trained and better advised on how to go after these type of groups and how to go after the complex criminals. on a local side and more at home, you may find yourself physically attacked by a criminal gang. Well, we've had one youngster here in Lethbridge in grade 10 who was attacked by a group of people that were associated with a gang that we know from the Edmonton area. Absolutely no reason to attack them whatsoever. And then, of course, at the end of the day, nobody wants to say anything to us because they feel that they will also be attacked if they report it to the police. Counterfeit products, as I discussed about the example about the brakes, is where they may cause a danger to you or a fire. You may have that toaster or you may have that new microwave that once again you bought out of buddy's back of his van, and in reality it's never passed any of the Canada safety codes, and you come home to find your house burnt down to the ground. The emotional cost to families, victims, people that are addicted to drugs, and the financial harms that exist. You, as a pensioner, may have your life savings in an account, and somebody comes along and steals that money. They originated from another country outside of Canada, and we can't track that money for you, and we can't find it at the end of the day, and we can't identify who took your funds. Now your life savings are gone. Interesting enough about, and these statistics are a little dated, just in relation to counterfeit goods, Canada itself is responsible for 10 to 20% of the counterfeit goods that are sold in our country. DVDs, CDs, other electronic products, all made here in Canada. And also, interestingly enough, pharmaceuticals that are produced in Canada that are actually counterfeit and sold over the Internet. The drug that you buy over the Internet, while it's very expensive for you to go to the local drugstore to get, and it's cheaper to buy it on the Internet, you don't know what you're getting at the end of the day. And that's another danger to your own health and your personal safety that you expose yourself to by purchasing those type of things. Human trafficking. We haven't necessarily seen this as a huge issue in Alberta. It absolutely does exist. In 2005, there was an investigation conducted by the Integrated Border Enforcement Team that works at the border, made up of the RCMP and Canada Border Services, involving a number of Korean nationals who came to Canada legally but were trying to get themselves down into the United States illegally. Some of those individuals had paid anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000 to an unknown person to do all the paper and get them to a certain point and then put them in a van and have them go down to the States. Open the van doors and say, okay, there's the border, go ahead and cross. Their lives are in danger. We don't know where they came from. We don't know if they have criminal histories. A number of issues. So now they've become victims themselves because they have to pay the money back, or they've lost that money, and now they're getting shipped back to their country of origin. We're also victimized because they're fulfilling jobs that somebody else could fulfill and adversely affect the employment market. Also, some of these individuals are brought over here specifically for the purpose of the sex trade in Canada and in the United States. Cigarettes, drugs, and guns. Absolutely a multi-billion dollar industry in illegal cigarettes throughout Canada. I'm sure in the news you've heard many stories about the illegal tobacco trade down on the Ontario-New York border. Health Canada estimates that one in five of us are smoking an illegal tobacco product. If it's an illegal tobacco product, we don't know how it was made, we don't know what chemicals were used in its production, and once again, aside from smoking being bad for you, you don't know what you're ingesting. Firearms, absolutely. And even just here, for an example, where we had two U.S. military personnel that we dealt with in conjunction with the Calgary Police Service who were purchasing guns down in Montana, reporting them stolen to the authorities, and then coming across the border, meeting here in Lethbridge, and selling those guns to gang members up in Calgary. Fortunately enough, we were able to assist Calgary in that investigation and get everybody into custody. And also, fortunately enough, they were down in the United States where they looked at 25 to 50 years in jail. Those are all items that we have happened. And just a local example that to show you once again, just because we're in Lethbridge doesn't mean we're immune to these type of things. They are happening here. In Lethbridge, we are affected by the gangs from Calgary and Edmonton. It started back as far as 2003, 2004 when we started to see an influx. And basically, like any company, you're doing really well in your location and now it's time to expand and go out somewhere else and make a profit in another location. It's all about making money. New trend with gang members coming from across eastern Canada. We are starting to see here in Alberta, because they want to take part in the Alberta Advantage, gang members coming out from Ontario that have been well-established and long-time established in Ontario. They know how to run a business. They know how to run drug trafficking on a street. So now they're coming to Alberta to set up shop. because of the relationships we build throughout the intelligence community and the policing community across Canada, we're able to talk to our fellow officers in Ontario, get information on these individuals, and get a jump on them before they can actually establish themselves here. Marijuana grow operations, multiple residences. We've seen examples in the media within the last 12 months where we've been involved, where organized crime has bought five or six houses or seven houses, and they're purchased strictly to grow marijuana. And then that marijuana is shipped outside our community down into the United States where it's worth a lot more money. Drastic increase in the amount of complexity of financial crimes. Our financial crimes unit is inundated with internet crime and financial crimes. And as Chief McKenzie said, there's no lack of people that are sitting around their house trying to figure out a new way to scam somebody else. It's one of the fastest growing identified organized crime areas in Canada today. We are trying to affect these individuals, or one of the reasons why they're moving out of some of the bigger centers like Edmonton and Calgary is because of the proactive enforcement in the larger centers. A few more police officers, a little bit more specialized units, so they feel they can come out to the smaller communities and they will be undetected. Just a second here, I'll explain to you how we're trying to put a stop to that. And then, like I say, it's also an ability they think that they can hide in rural Alberta. As I discussed, the proximity to the U.S.-Alberta-Montana border, or the Alberta-Montana border, our Highway 3 corridor that we have for drug trafficking across from British Columbia and down into eastern Canada. Also, we have a casino down here in Lethbridge, and a casino is a perfect place for somebody to launder their illicitly gained funds, their drug money, through the casino. They walk in, they put $8,000 down of drug money, they change it in for chips, play a couple of games, go back, change the money back. Now they've won that money basically at the casino, and it's untraceable. So they take advantage of our casinos in our province. What we're doing here, when Chief McKenzie was the inspector in charge of the Criminal Investigation Division, I worked with Chief McKenzie and Inspector Brad Siddall with the RCMP on a three-year project to create the Integrated Intelligence Unit. And what that is that myself, an RCMP officer, and I have an intelligence analyst in my office and another investigator. We are now responsible for the southwest corner of the province. We felt that in order to better share information and to combat organized crime moving into southern Alberta, we needed to enter into a partnership to expand our jurisdictional area. So rather than just being interested in what happens in Lethbridge, we wanted a bigger picture. We're responsible for 17 RCMP detachments, and we also coordinate with the Tabor Police Service and also with the Blood Tribe Police Service. We also developed with Medicine Hat and designed the Southern Alberta Intelligence Group. We meet with NCOs from the Alberta RCMP detachments from around southern Alberta, representatives from Medicine Hat and Tabor and the other agencies to exchange information. We've been doing that for the last 3 years, and it's a fantastic program. It's allowed us to catch up with traveling criminals quite quickly. We expanded the size of our special operations unit for drug investigations and also utilization of proceeds of crime funding, which we apply for that allows us to purchase things that does not affect you as a taxpayer but allows us to have specialized equipment to fight organized crime. As I said, we're integrated with the RCMP. We work with the Border Patrol IBET team that's responsible for border integrity on our Montana-Alberta border. We're a partnership in the National Intelligence Program, and we work close at hand with Criminal Intelligence Services Alberta. What you can do to help, as Chief McKenzie has said, report suspicious activity. If there's traffic next door at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, there's cars showing up and they're there for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, that's not right. That's not normal in a neighborhood. That's an indication to us that it's a drug house. Keep your eye on your financial statements. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. If somebody says if you send them $10,000, they're going to send you $500,000, they're not telling you the truth. That is too good to be true. Otherwise, we'd all be rich. Check your financial statements. There's nothing wrong with going to a company like Equifax or something of that nature and checking to see if your statements or your financial assessment is out of whack. Make sure that somebody hasn't stolen your identity, isn't taking advantage of you. Be wary of cheap products. On the products that you're purchasing, look for spelling mistakes or look for errors in the way that they're made or manufactured. Let the police know when you've discovered a counterfeit product or that if there's something wrong with your bank account. Anytime you notice something suspicious, give us a call. at the very least, by telling us, we'll investigate it and find out if there's something to it or not. But if you don't call, we'll never know, and these people can continue to take advantage of our community. I would highly encourage you to join some of the programs that exist here. Block Parent Program, Crime Stoppers, Neighborhood Watch, your community programs, such as the London Road Neighborhood Association. By getting together, knowing your neighbors again, and talking to everybody, then we can know who's in our neighborhood and who's functioning there. And when somebody's there that they shouldn't be, like a street gang out of Edmonton or Calgary, or there's drug trafficking going on in your community, you can get a hold of us and we can deal with that for you. These are some websites, and if you can contact the police service and ask for myself, I can provide this information to you at any time. The only way that we can combat organized crime and other types of crimes is by keeping ourselves aware of it and having knowledge about how it affects us, how to identify it, and how to stop it. Why should we care? I think it's very obvious. It's our neighborhood. It's our community. If we don't care, then what are we going to hand our children down the road? And that's the end of my presentation. Very quick. Thank you.